The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details.
Kia ora, I'm Senga and welcome to Heritage South, the show connecting Southlanders to their heritage and where we talk heritage happenings here in the South. Last time I was lucky enough to chat with Julia Bradshaw, who is the museum curator and she's a history researcher and an author. And she's joining me again. This time we're going to be talking about her book that is in the pre-publication stage called Digging Deep, Women on the New Zealand Goldfields. So welcome back, Julia.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really great that you could come back and chat to me, because we had a really good chat in our last episode about what it is that you do at Canterbury Museum, and really starting to uncover that whole idea of your passion for our history, for the women in our history, and particularly around that Goldfields area. So you spoke at our AGM for Heritage South recently, and you have shared a little bit about your journey into the role of women in the Goldfields, not just the wives of miners or those that earned their living as prostitutes, but there were adventurers, there were entrepreneurs, there were tough survivors in amongst all of those women. So why this particular topic, Julia? What turned this into a book for you?
I think that part of the reason it turned into a book was I was finding all these amazing stories through my work, but I was getting a bit cross. I was getting a bit angry about the histories I was reading about the Goldfields that either didn't mention women at all. Like, literally, you can go into some books and there's one or two women in the whole 300 pages. And also this idea, as you mentioned, that women were either prostitutes or dutiful wives and that there was nothing else.
Yeah, they were angels or devils.
Exactly. Mm. And so as I was researching, I was finding lots of women doing really, really interesting things, and I felt I needed to share those stories.
And you do, you start to collect them, don't you? I know I'm a collector of stories, and you do, and you start to kind of bring them together. I think the other frustrating thing about when you're trying to actually research a woman is that idea of you don't always know what her maiden name, her birth name was. And she would often be referred to as Mrs. Horace Spencer, for instance. So you go, well, okay, so she married a guy called Horace Spencer, but what was her name? So that it can be quite tricky to research women.
It's really tricky, and women themselves have made that even more complicated by sometimes deliberately using names that are not theirs as well, because they were hiding from someone or they just wanted to escape their past. You know, there's a woman who, when she was in Queenstown, she was a hotel keeper, she was Margaret Mills. When she moved to the West Coast, she became Margaret Adair. During a court case, it came out that she was married to a guy called Kennedy, but she never used the name Margaret Kennedy. She eventually married and became Margaret Tully, but then when she divorced, she became Margaret Adair again. So she used all these names kind of interchangeably as they suited or not, and that makes it a real challenge.
Interesting. And I mean, let's face it, her first name is Margaret. There would have been, you know, that would have been ten a penny. Mm-hmm. So trying to unravel, I'm just picturing like a big ball of yarn that's all interconnected, and it's like you're trying to unravel it to get the knots out.
Yeah, it's very complicated, and it really does require kind of a mind, and you go, hang on, you know, there's a coincidence or there's an overlap there, or I recognise that name from somewhere.
Very interesting. So I can only imagine how long it took you to do the research for this book.
I mean, I'm not joking when I say I've been researching it for 20 years. I obviously haven't been doing it all the time because I've been working on other projects, but I've always been collecting information, and I had a few databases and in the early days, and then I started to work on particular topics and themes. But it's been enormous and quite complicated to organise the material at the end.
I can imagine. I can only imagine what your footnotes are like and what your reference list is like. I did quite recently read an article that you had published, which I'm imagining came out of some of this 20 years of research, called Unmarried by Default, Quiet Bigamy in New Zealand's Goldfields. And I went, oh, okay, that's a different spin on it. How did that come about?
Well, that came about because I kept finding all of these people who were marrying bigamously. And while there were some people being charged with bigamy and they were reported in the newspapers, I was just finding so many others that were never came to public attention, and they're generally known as quiet bigamy. And some people were really good at it. I have one, Marianne Cosgrove, who was in Southland. She originally married her first husband in Victoria. He was charged with murdering someone who'd been paying her too much attention. He got off with a manslaughter plea and got sentenced to 7 years in jail. She came with her mother and her supposed stepfather, but her mother had married him bigamously. The three of these arrived on the Nokomai Goldfields, and then she married again as a widow. And then he left after a few years, and so she married again as a widow, making her a trigamist.
Right. Yes, I definitely heard of the term bigamist, and now this Marianne shows that you can be a trigamist. Mm-hmm. What I found interesting, as you say, she was around the Nokomai area, and her third husband was known as Pie Joe. And I think, what an interesting name. He's got to have a story that goes along with Marianne's story, I reckon.
Pie Joe was a baker. Yeah. Joseph Wallace, that's how he came to be Pie Joe. Pie Joe is interesting because he did get married. He went to the post office in Waikaia to get a marriage certificate, and the postmistress there knew that he had a wife, so she refused to issue one. So then he and his bride-to-be rode on their horse to Tapanui, and Magdalena Orkiston, who was the postmistress, she'd phoned ahead, so they couldn't get one there either. And then eventually he went all the way to Gore, and they didn't know, so they issued him with a certificate. But then Magdalena Orkiston, the postmistress, she informed on him, and he was charged with falsifying a marriage certificate. But Joe Pye argued, quite correctly, that when he and his previous wife had argued, she told him she'd already been married before and her husbands were still alive. So technically he wasn't guilty of bigamy because he wasn't legally married.
Oh my goodness, it's very confusing.
It's very confusing.
And I do think Marianne actually ended up retiring to around the Gore area, mm-hmm. didn't she?
Yes, and she's buried under the name Mrs. Wallace. So she didn't give up that name, even though her husband, he had married again. People's lives were quite complicated, and they kept a lot of secrets, and they tried to cover them up as times got more respectable. Sometimes you see that they've revised their marriage date by 10 years backwards to cover the birth of all of their children rather than just the ones that were born after they actually did get married. So you can't believe what you read.
No, you cannot. Obviously, your daytime role is a curator of social history. And there's got to be a huge element of genealogy that comes into what we're discussing here. And you kind of think, well, if there's a record of it, and you know, like a marriage or a death or a birth certificate, that it's got to be right. But actually, what I'm hearing is, maybe not. Maybe not so much.
No, that's right. And I obviously joke to myself that it's like this book has been like doing 100 family histories. And to some degree it has, but I've relied a lot on the work of genealogists, and I'm particularly grateful for those people who've shared their trees or put them on Ancestry, or which means that, you know, obviously it means I don't have to do the whole tree. I can kind of figure out where something happened or I've found some really interesting things though. I found two family trees on Ancestry where there is a bigamous marriage, but obviously the two families don't know about each other. Ooh. Some really interesting things like that.
Tricky. Very tricky. So would you also consider yourself to be a genealogist as well?
Yes. I'm doing my own family history, which actually does have I do have a bigamous ancestor. I think probably most people do, to be honest. Yes, so definitely.
Yeah. It's interesting because when I was research librarian at the public library, that would be some of the work that I would be doing for people and helping them to find out another little piece of their own family puzzle. But of course, my children are first generation New Zealanders on my side of the family. So I don't actually have anybody I can do research on in my family history here in New Zealand. But I've met many genealogists and they are absolutely passionate. And they put me in the shade in terms of their tenacity and how they go about it. Papers passed.
Really good. Fantastic. The only frustration, and it's not Papers Past's fault, is that obituaries for women are few and far between, and quite often they just write about the husband, or they focus on a woman's generosity or her kindliness or her charity, when actually I know that they've been running a business for 30 years and, you know, doing a whole lot of other things, but it wasn't the dumb thing to talk about that.
You want to be as true to the facts as you possibly can, but actually there'll be elements where I've got as much information as I'm going to get, and I kind of need to put a little bit of structure around that now, you know, to actually tell this woman's story. Yeah,
it's interesting. And another thing to mention about genealogists actually is DNA is a bit of a game changer for some of these roadblocks that people have. And there's one woman that I talk about in my book, and she had a child with the father of the family that employed her. She was a servant. That only came to light because of DNA, because the family of the child, who was adopted, that was the child who just turned up on the doorstep. But DNA showed that it was the father of the families and the servant girls. Yeah, so
I guess that's a case of if you're going to go down that route, be prepared
definitely
for whatever it is that it's going to uncover.
Yeah, because there are some really unpleasant family histories as well.
Yes, so you've got to, if you're going to go down that route, be prepared for whatever it is that you may uncover as part of that. I know that your book is coming out in 2026, but I have to ask, do you have another research passion that you're now delving into, or are you still too immersed in the women of the goldfield stories?
I think I'm still surfacing from that, but I do keep finding other, you know, more interesting women. But I'm also really interested in one of the projects I've been working on and I'm involved in at Canterbury Museum is the European engagement with Ponamu. So I've done some work on the early export of Ponamu from New Zealand and doing some work about its use by European jewellers and the development of the kind of Ponamu carving art that we see today. So that's an area that I'm looking at as well.
Interesting. Mm,
something completely different.
And the thing is that I know you get so much enjoyment. I mean, I know I do. That just actually uncovering some of those stories. And if you don't actually turn it into anything else, then that's okay. But it sounds like it's certainly something that could be the next book.
Mm.
But if people are interested in finding out more about your book, they do need to keep an eye out for it. Just remind us of the title again, Julia.
It's Digging Deep, Woman on the New Zealand Goldfields. Canterbury University Press are publishing it.
I think it's going to be really exciting to read it. I know I'm definitely going to be putting my name down for a copy when it hits the shelves. And I think we should keep in touch because I feel like there's going to be some more stories that we can connect on.
It'd be great.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for joining me, Julia. It's been great. And thanks for listening to Heritage South. This show is available as a podcast from the Radio Southland website, radiosouthland.org.nz. You can stream or download this episode. Just look for us in the Programs tab. Links can also be found on Facebook through Radio Southland's page, facebook.com/Radio Southland, and also on Heritage South at heritagesouthnz. And if you want to make sure you don't miss any episodes, you can subscribe to this podcast on the Apple Podcast platform, through the Access Media app, or on Spotify.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.